Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Russ Terry, founder and CEO of Life Coach Radio Networks. Today's sponsor is Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free audiobook when you sign up for a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. That's audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. And now, here's today's show.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to Mark My Words here on the Life Coach Radio Network. And today is Sunday, April 5th, 2015. I'm Mark Shaw, broadcasting live from New York City, and I'm a certified life and business coach. And twice per month, I host Mark My Words, which is a life coaching oriented show where I interview various people with inspiring life stories of overcoming adversity. I also speak with authors of great coaching related books and programs, as well as many others who have great things to say. And sometimes I coach listeners who call in live on the air. So tune in the first and third Sunday of every month. So tonight is another live coaching hour. And the number to call in if you'd like to be coached about something you're challenged by or stuck in your life, the number is 646-716-9397. We actually already have some callers in the queue, so we're going to jump right in and get started with some coaching here on Mark My Words. So first, we have, we have Safia calling in from New York. Safia, how are you tonight?
I'm doing well, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing well, too. What can we do for you this evening?
So I'm having a hard time with the situation with my dad and his health. Mm-hmm. Just a little bit of background. My dad has neuropathy, so he has, like, lost all of his nerve endings in his legs.
Okay.
And he's older. He's, like, 56. This pain, this has been getting worse as the years have progressed. And what happens is he'll fall automatically without having the brain signals telling him that he's about to fall.
Mm-hmm.
So, and what makes it worse is that he's very overweight.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously because of his weight and things like that, it limits his ability to move around and his ability to lose the weight. So anyway, he's been falling a lot more lately, and just the other day he had another fall, and this time around it left him like bedridden. He couldn't move, and he still hasn't been able to move, and it's been a week now.
Mm-hmm.
So what's happening for me is a couple of things. One, I'm far away, and I feel helpless,
mm-hmm.
but I'm also really frustrated with the situation because my dad is the kind of person that's very stubborn.
Mm-hmm.
And even though he's been prescribed and he's got the medication, he's got the support system, he's got, you know, everybody around him that is willing and able to take him from point A to point B to get the therapy and do what he needs to do, he does not do it for himself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that's really frustrating me. So I feel helpless, and I'm also struggling to say, well, do I respect how he's feeling or do I push him? Because, you know, I've always been the one in my family that's like, when he pushes, I push back harder. And we've had, as
mm-hmm.
a teenager, we've had many fights over that when I was a teenager.
But
I feel like he's at that point where he needs that. And the situation is at home. I'm in New York. He's in California. My mom and my younger brother and sister are his 24-hour caretakers, really. He cannot move from point A to point B without a walker, a wheelchair, or a cane, or somebody actually helping him around.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, now the falling is getting worse. So I'm all the way over here, and I hear them, and I talk to them, and, you know, I know that for them, they're doing everything that they possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
And even though these falls are happening more and more frequently, and they're telling him, listen, you need to go get this done. Your doctors are telling you, you need to go get this done. he's not. He's, for whatever reason, he's so stubborn about it, and it's frustrating the hell out of me. I'm trying to figure out how do I deal with that.
Sure, sure. I can hear the frustration in your voice as you talk, Safiya, and it makes total sense. I mean, you know, you care a lot about your dad, and I mean, you know, he's your dad. You only get one, right?
Right.
And, you know, to see him, you know, suffering that way, and to see the rest of your family suffering with it, when it feels like a lot of the suffering is unnecessary if he would just take the advice of the doctors, is a very, very frustrating thing for, you know, for any family member to experience with a loved one.
Yeah, and you know, the thing about him is he's a very, very, I mean, my father, if it wasn't for his mental strength, I don't know how he would make it through the day, because he's mentally very, very strong, and he's very optimistic. He's one of the wisest people I know. And even though he knows all the things he needs to be doing for his health, like he can take care of his family, he can take care of his business, he can take care of everything. But when it comes to his health, for whatever reason, he doesn't make that a priority.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Even though he's suffering.
Sure. Sure. So let me ask you this. What's the fundamental question that you're asking here tonight that I could help you with regard to this situation? What is it that you're hoping to take away here?
I guess I'm trying to figure out what I can do, or how can I get over my feelings of helplessness. I mean, I get that what I'm feeling is probably natural and expected given the circumstances, but I feel like I just want to shake him. I want to do something. And the thing about it is, even if I was there and I was standing in the room with him, he's so stubborn. And it's, for me, I'm just trying to break through that. I guess what my question is, how do I either A, break through that, or two, be okay with it and just accept it and learn to be okay with it? I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. So when you say be okay with it, what exactly do you mean?
Do I just be okay with him being stubborn because it's been years and everybody's been fighting the same battle? Or do I keep pushing? Do I do the things that I need to do? I mean, I feel like if I can get on a plane tomorrow and fly to California and be there, I would. But even if I were there, I feel like he's the kind of person that he's like, when he sees it his way, it's his way or no way. And that can be very difficult to deal with.
Sure.
So I guess my fundamental question is, at this point, do I just, okay, let it be like, listen, if this is the choice that you're making, then so be it, and figure out some way and learn how to be okay with that. But that's what I'm struggling with, being okay with that.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, it's very hard to be okay with something that, you know, you're seeing as causing him discomfort and even potential harm.
Yeah.
You know, so that makes a lot of sense. So you're saying that there's things that he can do that the doctor wants him to do, and he's just refusing to have it done. Is that pretty much the bottom line there?
Yeah, I mean, he's been prescribed, like, he has to go to physical therapy, and he's gone to physical therapy 3 times. My sister, my younger sister, you know, she's there, she takes care of him, and they do such a great job. Everybody there is just doing such a great job with just doing whatever they need to do. He'll go, and he'll be like, he's not comfortable, or he doesn't like the place, or some excuse after the other, and then he won't go back. And it's like, this is a pattern for him in many things. With the weight loss, it's the same thing. He's the kind of person, he'll go on a diet and he'll be on a diet for like 3 weeks, and he'll just like do starve himself basically. And then he'll just fall back to like, you know, eating and gaining back the weight or whatever. And that's just, like I said, that's a pattern with him. And I've seen that my entire life with him.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, where he is really strong and a leader in so many other areas, when it comes to his health, for whatever reason, that's not a priority to him. And that's the thing that really gets to me.
Yeah, sure. So tell me a little bit more about how you feel with regard to that. You talked about the frustration. I hear that this is a pattern of his for a very long time. So as you talk about it and as you experience that with him, what are you feeling?
A great deal of sadness and a lot of frustration, like I said.
Mm-hmm.
And the sadness because like this last fall, I could tell this last fall really hit him hard because not only was he not able to move around and go to work and do all the things he's normally able to do, but the tone of his voice, like I said, he's always been very optimistic, always a positive person, but he's becoming very depressed and he's getting really fed up of himself and his situation. So much so that he's saying to me, he might as well just let his blood pressure run low and just go into a coma or something like that because he's feeling like a burden to everybody. You know, and he's seeing my younger sister, she's 20, my brother, he's 17, and they really have no lives. They cannot, like my mom is older, so my brother, for instance, my dad cannot get up. He can't even put his shoes on his own. And so my younger brother and sister, they can't go anywhere really, especially my brother, because he's, you know, my dad relies on him physically to help him out. And they have no lives. They can't really do anything outside of be with mom and dad all the time.
How long has that been?
Like this bad for about 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so hard on your family, huh?
It is. It really is. And of course, nobody complains because we love him and, you know, we do it. But it gets to them as well because no matter, you know, they're doing everything for him. And as my mom says, he's become so easily agitated. Everything he'll snap at and everything he'll just... Nothing is like right. He'll snap at everything, and
when did that start?
Was
that since this fall, or was that sooner?
I mean, this fall I think has made him depressed on a different level, but that has been for years. He's been like that, but I think my mom has mentioned to me it's gotten worse lately. It's gotten worse over the past few months. And sometimes I rationalize it and I say, you know, he's the kind of person that's used to being in control. He used to surf. He used to always physically active. He was always out there. Like I said, he was a leader in the community. He's an amazing businessman, all this stuff. So now to be able to be so physically disabled, so to speak, I can imagine the way it's hit his pride, you know?
Oh, of course.
And so I think a lot of the times he snaps and things like that, it's just a knee-jerk reaction to him having a loss of control of his life, his body, you know.
Sure. No, absolutely. And that's definitely what it is. And, you know, of course, knowing that doesn't make it any easier to deal with, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Right?
Because,
you know. So I'm actually just wondering, what kind of support do you and your family, specifically your family members who are with him, have in, you know, in terms of taking care of him, whether that's practical support, emotional support?
We just have each other.
Okay, so there's no outside help?
No. And I think as of lately, I was talking to my sister a few days ago about possibly getting some outside help. But again, my dad is stubborn. And he's like resisting that idea of having somebody come in. I think it's a pride thing for him. You know, having to be quote unquote belittled to that.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Yeah, that's enormously difficult. I mean, I remember going through that with my dad when we decided to take bring in a home health aide. And it was quite a battle. And the home health aide handled it actually by just kind of whipping him into shape about it and saying, look, I'm in charge here. That's all there is to it. And, you know, he eventually kind of gave into that. But it was enormously difficult. And it makes sense, too. I mean, it's sort of a sort of last admission to not having your independence. And I think that's the hardest thing for us as human beings to feel like we're losing. is our independence, you know.
Absolutely.
So, how's your other family members doing?
They have their good days and their bad. I think, you know, a lot of the times I talk to my mom and she's like, you know how your dad is. That's all. She's always been, there's a whole back history to this, but she's always been much more submissive. My dad has always been the one in the relationship that just makes the decisions and whatnot. Even though they have a very, very, very good relationship, my mom has always been, at the end of the day, whatever your dad wants, that's bottom line. Mm-hmm. And my brother and sister, who are younger, they give him a hard time for that because they're like me in a sense. When I left my home and I moved to New York, and my little brother and sister were very little. They weren't even teenagers yet. And I was that one in the household that was always pushing back when he felt like he was right, and I'm like, no, you're not, and I don't care if you're my dad or not. Wrong is wrong. That was always my role, and we always got over it because I think me and my dad have a very good relationship because I always called him out on his BS. And mm-hmm. I think my younger brother and sister try to do that, but at the same time, he wasn't to this level that he is now when I was living there. And now they mm-hmm. just, a lot of times my sister just said, you know what? Sometimes it's just easier to do what he wants. Because mm-hmm. to try to fight it, it's just going to be a fight. It's just going to be like a conversation that goes on and on and on for hours.
Sure.
And no matter how much you talk about it, at the end of it, he'll still come back and do what he wants to do anyway.
Yeah. 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 So I can see the dilemma in like, so do I try to change that or do I just let it go and learn to live with it? Right.
Yeah.
And I guess so something that comes up for me, Safia, as you're talking is, I mean, if your dad won't agree to, any kind of external support coming in, I guess what I'm wondering too is about how helpful emotional support, particularly for your mom, and then of course your siblings, how valuable that might be. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think that's much, much needed, and I try to be that sounding board for them. I try to use whatever coaching skills that I have with mm-hmm. them, and I'm better at that than with my dad because my dad always. When I try to do my best coaching on him, I'm just too emotionally involved. With my mom and my sister and my brother, they call me and they vent all the time. And I'm happy to be that person for them. But I'm over here and I'm like, you guys, something needs to change. You can't keep, yes, he's stubborn, but you have to be more stubborn than him in this situation because it's not doing him any good. And I feel like it's just words. It's just words because no matter how much I tell them
mm-hmm.
and no matter how much they agree and they want to do, they're there living with him.
Yeah, that's why that's why I'm wondering about outside emotional support for them. Because here's the thing, Safia. While, I mean, it's wonderful that you want to provide that for them and you've got the skills and abilities to do that, there's only so far you can go as a family member. Right. And what I get concerned about as you tell me that is the enormous amount of stress it puts on you.
Yeah.
Increasing your feelings of helplessness because you're so far away. Right.
Yep.
And, you know, so I'm wondering how open you think they would be, how much of a good idea you might think it would be for them to get some, you know, some professional outside emotional support for them, which could then be the start of them learning from that person how to bring in some outside support for your dad as well, because it would be somebody who's, you know, probably been through that a million times with other clients.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be really valuable, especially to my siblings. I think mm-hmm. my mom would have a harder time agreeing just because she's old school and old fashioned and, you know, whatever the case may be. But I think my younger brother and sister, I'm sure they would find a lot of value in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which can then translate to my mom, you know.
Mm-hmm. Sure. How old are your siblings?
My brother's going to be 17 this year. My sister's going to be 20.
Okay, so they're pretty young to have to deal with all this.
And they've spent the past 4 or 5 years dealing with this.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
My dad started,
he started really getting terrible at the falls and it happening more frequently the year my son was born. And my son is 6 now, so it's been about 6 years.
Wow. So how is it affecting your brothers and sisters' lives? I mean, I'm assuming, you know, they're, what, high school and college, right?
Yep, they have none. They have none. My brothers, they were on spring break in California last week. My dad fell on Monday, and he could not go back to school because my dad could not move around. My dad could not get from point A to point B. My dad couldn't go to the bathroom. It comes down to, like, things like that to that degree. And my mom is not physically able to help him. So my brother, God knows best, he's a big guy, you know, not in terms of overweight, but he's tall and he's very, like, you know, he's fit and he's able to handle my dad like that. And so my dad, my brother had to basically stay home the entire, you know, so his grades are
How aware is your dad of that part of the impact?
He knows. And that's why I think this time around, like you said, it's getting to him even more because he always tells me that he's so blessed. He doesn't know what he would do without the two of them. And he knows the sacrifices that they make. And I think that makes him feel even more guilty. And now, like I said, it makes him feel even more depressed that he is such a burden to his younger children. And that he's, you know, he's really taking it hard this time. And that's why I feel like I want this time to be the turning point for him. But according to my sister, a couple of days after every fall, a couple of days after, he'll be depressed and stuff like that. Then he'll be able to move around again. He'll go back to work and he'll go back to normal. And then it's like, you know, it's like the cycle repeats itself.
Sure. Absolutely. You know, what resources do you know of as far as social workers, therapists and stuff, where at least your family can start with getting some support?
You know, I don't know in California, but that's the beautiful thing about Google. And I can easily look into that based on the insurance that they have. And I started actually talking to my younger sister about that. But for my dad, I didn't mention it for them. But I think that it would be a really smart thing to look into, to start looking into that for them.
Yeah.
Because they need it.
Yes. Yeah. Do you know if they have long-term care insurance?
I don't know, but I can find out.
Okay, because that's what would cover something like a home health aid and things like that. And, you know, it might be just, even if it's just a couple of hours a week, although it sounds like he might need more. But, you know, somebody who's a professional in that can actually make the determination about what's needed and whatnot. So that might be something to explore with your mom is, you know, finding out what do they have in terms of long-term care insurance, which is entirely separate from health insurance. And I'd also like to suggest another resource to you, Safia. There's a coach that I know of. He's a life coach that specializes in caregivers. And he coaches what he calls the accidental caregiver, which are people who find themselves in a caregiver role that they never would have volunteered to take on because of a loved one who suddenly becomes sick or something like that. And that's his entire specialty. He's an IPEC grad as well. His name is Michael Bloom. I actually interviewed him on my show once. So if you want to go to the archived episodes of my show and find the episode where I interviewed him, his website is bloomforcoach.com, B-L-O-O-M for coach, F-O-R, coach.com, Michael Bloom.
Okay, perfect. I'm writing that down.
And he's got some, he has a resource guide on his website, the top 5 free caregiver support tools to reduce exhaustion, stress, and overwhelm. And he's got some other free resources on his site. That is a way to help family schedule things that they need to have done for their loved one where other people can pitch in. And it's a central site where people can go and sign up to help and things like that. So he's got a link to that resource. I think it's called manyhelpinghands.com. And he also wrote a really great book that is all about how to take care of yourself when you're the accidental caregiver. So I would highly recommend him. And I think that he could be somebody that could be really resourceful for you in helping you with where to begin to find some of those other resources, you know, as well as for you.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds good. I'm going to look into that as soon as we get off here.
Great. Yeah. It's enormously hard what you're going through. And I remember going through, you know, very similar stuff with my dad, not too long ago. And it's really difficult. There's no easy answers to it. It's hard to figure out when do you draw the line and just say, you know what, I'm taking the bull by the horns and this is the way it's going to be. And he's just going to have to get over it and let us do it.
Great.
Versus how much do you hang back and kind of have him feel his own way through this? He sounds very depressed from what you're telling me. And, you know, it may be helpful to take that into account in terms of, you know, when someone's depressed, it's very hard for them to make decisions. So, you know, it may behoove you to have a little bit of a stronger hand in this, you know, that's just something to consider when making that determination. And also to make sure that you're taking care of yourself, because my God, it must be so difficult to be 3,000 miles away and, you know, feel helpless, not just for him, but for your brother, your sister, and your mom.
Yeah, it is. And that's the thing that pains me, because I'm so close to them. And I'm so close to my dad. And just knowing that he's going through what he's going through just breaks my heart for him.
Mm-hmm,
and
sure.
For them. And for them, too. So, and like I said, I wish I'm the go-getter in my family. I'm the one, when there's something to be done, just call me. And I get it done. And I just feel, like I said, I feel so helpless from over here that I can't. So.
Yeah. If you could wave a magic wand and have one thing change in this, what would it be?
It would be him getting the help he needs, really. Just getting the help that he needs. Because I think once he starts to see results and he starts to feel better in one area, it'll try. And I know him. I know him, and I know that he's once he starts to see results and he starts to see proof that, hey, this thing actually is working, it motivates him to keep going.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, with everything that he's been going through, and he's in this experimental treatment, he's been doing this for quite a while now, and he hasn't seen any results. And I think that's also one of the things that's kind of depressing him, because it's not like he hasn't tried things, but it hasn't been working for his body. And I think that makes him feel a little fed up of the whole situation as well.
Sure. So you're battling so many different layers of this, you know. It's enormously difficult. But one thing that's clear to me, Safia, the more you talk about this, is how necessary it is that some outside professional help come in some way, shape, or form. If not right away, an actual aid to physically help him, because I realize that's a huge hurdle for him, as well as for your mom. I mean, that's a big decision to make. But since it's been going on this long and there's so much stress, just having each other is just such a burden that some outside professional help is needed, even if that starts in the form of counseling for your brother, your sister, and your mom.
Absolutely.
You know, because if something happens to any of them as a result of the stress and all of that, you know, then there's even more burden. So, you know, you want to all be able to be helpful, but also take care of yourselves as well.
Right.
You know, and one of the things I know about caregivers too, is that many times, particularly when it's a one-on-one situation, so, you know, it's a little different than with yours, because you got your siblings, but, you know, in a situation where it's just like, if it was, you know, just your mom taking care of him, then it becomes even more critical. And in many situations, caregivers pass away before the person they're caring for because of the stress and the stress-related illness that results in them, which is why it's so critically important for the caregiver to have the proper care and be taking care of themselves. Because if they get hurt or worse, then where's the person they're caring for going to go?
Yeah, exactly.
You know? So, and it sounds from what you're telling me, and I can see this from my own personal experience, that at this point it sounds really, really intense, and that some professional intervention from some experts that see this all the time and know how to fight these battles and know how to support a family is really needed.
I agree. I guess just looking into this and doing this would help me feel less helpless.
Yes. And that's what I'm hearing too, is that helpless feeling in you. So this sounds like an action that you can take, that's something where you can begin to make a difference.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That was helpful. Thank you so much.
Great. You're welcome. What's the biggest insight you got from the call?
There were so many, but I guess the biggest one would be that I still can do something, even if I'm not physically there.
Mm-hmm.
I can still help. I can still do what I used to do. I can still be that go-getter from all the way over here.
Yeah.
And I can still help my dad in his little, even if it's in this little way, I can still help him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, Sophia, great. I wish you the best of luck. Please keep me posted on how it all goes, and let me know if there's anything else I can do to support you along the way.
Well, thank you so much, Mark.
You're very welcome, Sophia. You're welcome. Have a great night, and best of luck to you.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Yeah, caring for a loved one who isn't well, enormously difficult. Went through it with my own dad, and my mom was by herself taking care of him, and ultimately he ended up in a nursing home, and which was really exactly what was needed. And as painful as it was, my mom couldn't do it by herself. She was doing everything, and it was just too hard for her. So, while it wasn't pleasant, that seemed to be really the best option. And those are very difficult decisions to make for loved ones. And hopefully Sophia will see her way to clear to some alternatives that will benefit her and her family, and specifically her dad in many ways. So we're going to take a short break here as I share some announcements. So the number to call, first of all, if you would like to talk to us live here on Mark My Words, is 646-716-9397. And we'll take a short break while I announce some great stuff that's available to you as a Mark My Words listener from our sponsor, Audible.com. So Mark My Words is happy to be sponsored by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment and information. They have more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're listening to us on right now. And if you sign up at our URL, which is audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio, you get one free audiobook and 1 month trial of the service for free. So that's audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. There's some really great titles too, and some that I found before the show tonight. One is The Art of Aging, A Doctor's Prescription for Well-Being, written by Sherwin B. Newland. And in his landmark book, How We Die, he profoundly altered our perception of the end of life. And now in The Art of Aging, he steps back to explore the impact of aging on our minds and bodies, strivings, and our relationships. Melding a scientist's passion for truth with a humanist's understanding of the heart and soul, Newland has created a wise and inspiring book about the ultimate stage of life's journey. Also, another one that looks interesting, Off Balance, Getting Beyond the Work-Life Balance Myth to Personal and Professional Satisfaction. One of the major issues in our lives today, of course, is work-life balance, and everyone wants it. No one seems to have it. But Matthew Kelly believes that work-life balance was a mistake from the start, because we don't really want balance. We want satisfaction. So Kelly lays out the system that he uses with his clients, his team, and himself to find deep long-term satisfaction, both personally and professionally. He introduces us to three philosophies of our age that are dragging us down And he shows us how to cultivate the energy that'll give us enough battery power for everything we need and want to do. And finally, in five clear steps, he shows us how to use his personal and professional satisfaction system to establish and honor our biggest priorities, even if we spend a lot more time on some of the lesser ones. So that's audible.com. And again, our link is audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio for 1 free month of the service and 1 free audiobook. Again, the number to call in if you'd like to call into the show tonight is 646-716-9397. And next we have on the line Penelope, and Penelope also calling from New York. So Penelope, how are you this evening?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good too. Thanks for calling Mark My Words. How can I help you tonight?
It's funny you just mentioned that book about the work-life balance, because I feel like something that I struggle with, and it seems to just get harder and harder as I get older. I thought I would have it figured out by now. My day job is that I'm a pediatrician, but my true passion is acting. I keep saying that I want to have a family, but then I seem to run away from committed relationships. it seems to be like I feel like I want opposite things a lot of the time, and I don't know how to find the balance between all of them.
Yeah, I was going to say, boy, a pediatrician and an actress, those are quite opposite ends of the spectrum.
They are. One uses one side of the brain and the other uses the other.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Wow. Although I'm sure you have to be a bit of a performer to work with kids, especially when they're sick.
And I also have to pretend that I care a lot of the time. But trying to find a way to meld everything just eludes me, and it gets very frustrating.
Sure, sure. So the quandary between being a So I'm hearing two things. There's the quandary between, you know, being a pediatrician versus a performing artist, and then the one about wanting a long-term relationship but kind of shying away from intimacy. Let me first ask you about the first one, between being a pediatrician and an actress. How ever present is that a dilemma for you? Like, is that something you're actually trying to resolve, or is that just kind of in the background for you? What's going on there?
No, it's sort of been the active pursuit of my professional life. I mean, I finished my residency here in New York and immediately moved out to LA. And I started working in the ER at night, so I would have the daytime to audition and take classes. So I've always, since I graduated from residency, I've been trying to figure out a way to do both. It worked pretty well in LA. Like I said, I just worked in the ER at night. I auditioned during the day. I became a member of a theater company. You know, I worked pretty steadily. It seemed to be okay. And then I moved back to New York, and it's been much harder to find that balance. I've been taking improv classes just to kind of keep myself, you know, using the right side of my brain. And, you know, I have an agent, and she sends me out like once every 3 months, you know. It's funny. Just yesterday, I bugged a friend of mine to work on my demo reel with me. You know, so I am actively trying to pursue acting and performing in some capacity. You know, I still work as a pediatrician, like, you know, whatever, you know, the 30 hours a week. So.
And in what kind of capacity and environment is it? Are you still ER?
Pretty much. I do a lot of ER stuff. My main job is at a pediatric urgent care, which is sort of like a city MD, but only for kids. We're not like in a hospital, but we pretty much do everything that an ER would be able to do. So yeah, it's pretty much mostly ER stuff, which, you know, is long hours. Like my days are 12-hour shifts. And I originally liked that because then I only had to work 3 shifts a week, you know. And I would have more days off to do other things. What I'm finding is that either I'm too tired the next day from working 12 hours, you know, or inevitably my agent will call in the middle of a shift and be like, this casting director wants to see you in an hour. And like, well, I can't go, you know, because I'm working today. I'm off the rest of the week, you know, and it just.
All right. So that's a very active problem. It's not just a wish in the back of your mind. You are really actively engaged in both of those careers and trying to make them work together.
Yes.
Okay. Great. Now, let me just ask you, just so I can get a sense of where both of these are for you. Let's just put that one aside for a moment. Let's look at the other part of the equation that you gave me too, which is about a long-term relationship. So what's going on there for you?
Oh, absolutely nothing.
I got that.
Help me, Mark. Help me. I was in a really serious relationship up until about 6 months ago. We dated for a year and a half, almost 2 years. And I've known for a while that I'm a commitment phobe, so I've been working on it, right? Like, I have my own therapist, and we've been working on it, and I met this guy 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, and all of those fears seemed to melt away. Like, seriously, I was like, this is it. This is the one. I finally found him. It took me all this time. And the closer we got to, he actually wound up moving out of New York for a job, and so then the thought was, okay, well, I'll follow you. I will move also. And the closer that got, the more I started questioning him. Like, are you sure this is what you want? You know, I don't know. I don't want to move there. If you don't really want me there, do you really want me there? And I just kind of, I started having all these doubts about myself and about him, and I just started questioning the relationship a lot. And, you know, and I saw it happening. I was like, don't do this. Don't do this. You're fine. Mm-hmm. Everything's fine. And I just sort of watched myself kind of self-sabotage a little bit. You know, and then ultimately, he started acting really weird once he moved, and then we broke things off like about 6 months ago.
I'm sorry to hear that. How are you feeling about that?
I really felt like shit. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that on the air.
you are now.
Too late.
We just established a new rule. It's a PG-rated show, so we're allowed.
I felt awful for the first, like, 3 months. I really, even though I had all these doubts, you know, it's one of those stupid things. I had all these doubts, and I wanted him to assuage them. You know, I wanted him to prove to me that he was committed, and then I would commit, you know? And ultimately, that doesn't really work. And so then I was like kicking myself in the head for 3 months, like, you know, why did you do that? You pushed him away. You know, you should call him and try to get him back. You should just move down there, you know, all sorts of nonsense. And then things kind of got ugly for a minute. And then after November, we've had absolutely no contact, and it's actually been much better. And now I feel like I'm over the shock and awe of it, and I can see a little bit more clearly now, like, that would have not been a very healthy relationship to stay in anyway. So I feel like just this past week, I sort of had this revelation that this is a pattern of mine and that I need to break it. So it's a good thing that this relationship ended so that I don't continue in this, you know, in this really bad pattern. So I need to just start all over again.
Okay. And so tell me again, in kind of in a synopsis form, that
Sorry,
what would you call that?
I didn't hear you.
You said you want to. You said you're trying to break this pattern.
Yeah.
And so tell me, kind of in a nutshell, again, what's the pattern? Describe the pattern for me that you're referring to.
So the pattern that we had in our relationship, the driving thrust of the majority of relationships I've been in, has been me sort of being in the caretaker role. And, you know, helping them through. Every guy that I've dated has come from an abusive household. Every guy that I've dated has, like, major issues with their father, you know, and then it starts showing up in the relationship, and then I jump into, well, we can work through this, and, you know, let's try this, and let's go to church together, let's try group therapy, let's try this, you know, I'm here for you, and I just jump right in. And I kind of, yeah, and then I don't really come up for air, you know?
Sure, sure.
And looking back on this relationship, it was starting to play out that exact way.
What does coming up for air look like in that situation, if you were to come up for air?
To not have to do that, to not have to fix somebody, and to just maybe, God, imagine them taking care of me. Like, that would feel lovely, you know? And or maybe nobody needs to be taken care of. I don't even know what that would look like. You know, if we were both, like, happy, functional people.
Sure. So, you know, it's interesting. I'm just seeing a parallel. It's like you have this, you've identified this need to take care of people. And what are you doing for a living?
Right.
It makes sense, right? And so you're putting out all this desire around taking care of folks, and you're attracting folks that need to be taken care of.
Right. 'Tis true.
Where's that come from, the desire to take care of everybody?
Oh, gosh. I definitely seen my mom do it her whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've sort of modeled, you know, I think my mom is like Superman or Superwoman. You know, I think she's incredible. She's definitely the strongest, most amazing person I know. And I think I've tried to be like her. And I've seen her sort of have worth within her family by being the caretaker. My mom has, like, you know, 4 or 5 siblings, but she's the go-to person. Like, when grandma's sick, you go to my mom. If, you know, somebody, any sort of issue with anything, like, my mom is the go-to sibling. And and within the family, everyone just kind of respects my mom for that and knows, like, you know, Aunt Anley's the one you go to, you know? And I think I've sort of modeled myself after, like, okay, well, that's how you have worth, so that's what you should do, you know?
Yep. Yeah. Sure. So, you know, okay. So this next question then, it's funny how this is all sort of interrelated, right? Going back to the being a pediatrician thing, where did that even come from? Because I'm hearing you say that you have this passion and stuff around acting. Mm-hmm. So where did becoming a physician come from? Like, how'd that fit into the picture?
Well, I'm pretty sure my mom has been telling me that I'd become a pediatrician since I was, like, in her womb. I'm pretty sure that happened. And when I was a kid, she told me that I was going to grow up to be a doctor. If you look in my 5th grade yearbook, it says my future career is going to be a pediatrician. I think it's come from her. I mean, growing up, though, I loved science. I mean, I can't deny that, right? You can't get through medical school. It's not
exactly. You can't become a pediatrician or a doctor of any sorts if you don't have an aptitude for the science, right?
Right. So, I mean, I did love science. I did love biology. I thought it was all very interesting. I was graduating as a biology major. Like, what else do you do with a bio major other than become a teacher or apply to grad school? So I applied to grad school, you know.
So, you know, so something that you said earlier is coming to my mind now too, that I want to ask you about that's also related to that. Okay. Brace yourself. You ready?
Okay.
What you said that stood out for me when I said, well, sometimes you have to be a performer to work with kids, especially when they're sick or injured. You said, yes, and pretend that I care. Tell me more about that.
do you have kids, Mark?
I don't.
Do you know,
I have, like, nieces.
Yeah. Do you know, like, what helicopter parents are? Have you heard that term?
I have, yes.
Right, where they just hover over the child and, like, any little scrape is going to turn into, you know, like, they're going to have to amputate your leg. I mean, I had a kid come in whose younger sister scratched her on the face with her fingernails. Her younger sister was, like, 18 months old and scratched this patient, you know, who was, like, maybe 3 years old, across her face with her fingernails. And the mom is in tears, bawling her eyes out because she has a scratch. It's not bleeding. It did not break the skin. It does not need to be, it's a scratch. And
wow.
She's freaking out. And the dad is also very anxious. He's like, we don't want a scar. We don't want a scar, doctor. What can we do tonight to make it not scar? I'm like, you don't have to do anything. Put a little Neosporin on it. it'll be gone by tomorrow. Like, I promise you. And, you know, and they're like, oh, my God, no, no, no. Okay, can we use Mederma? Should we see a plastic surgeon? You know, when will this start to go away? What kind of creams can you give us? We need something tonight.
Really? Did they really mention plastic surgeon?
They were like, do you think she's going to need a plastic surgeon?
Oh, my.
Okay. That's when I have to pretend.
Gotcha.
To care and be like, okay, I understand you're really upset, and yes, you know, she's a girl and it's a scratch, but I promise, you know, meanwhile, I want to say, are you fucking kidding me? Like, come on! You know?
Okay.
Yeah. So there are a lot of parents like that where I kind of have to pretend a little bit to not lose.
Yeah, you kind of have to cater to the anxiety that they're having. So.
Right.
Okay. The reason I asked that, and the reason I said prepare for this, is I thought it was good. I thought there was a much deeper meaning to it, like that you're really not passionate about the work.
Well, that there's some truth to that too. I mean, I like what I do. I don't think I love what I do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always tell my friends, like, if I am going to be on a TV show set for 18 hours, you will not hear me complain once. You know, mm-hmm. I will be walking around looking at the lights and the grips and talking to everybody and learning as much as I can and going over my line. Like, you will not hear me complain once. If you need to go 24 hours, no problem. I'm your girl. Where do we go? Where do we start?
Mm-hmm.
If I have to work 5 minutes past my shift in the ER, I am throwing shit. I'm like, oh, my God, my shift should be over. I don't want to do this. I don't want to be here. I did my 12 hours. Let me out, you know. So I know that there is a level of dissatisfaction. Well, I don't know if it's dissatisfaction, but it's not pure passion for medicine.
Yeah. So if you had, I think I know the answer to this. If you were given a choice that you could have a successful career as a physician or as an actress, and you had to make that choice tomorrow, which would you choose?
I would choose actress. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to tie this back together with the other thing that we're talking about in your relationships.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm hearing is a theme of not putting yourself first.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
How does that ring for you?
Very true.
Mm-hmm.
Very true.
Tell me more about that.
I mean, this last guy was probably the best in terms of taking care of me, but prior to him, there were a string of guys who were just really incredibly selfish, and I flipped it on its head and made it into, well, I'm an independent woman, so I don't need a boyfriend to do this for me or that for me, you know? And I sort of, like, told myself that for years, like, oh, you don't need a guy to do that for you. You don't need a guy for this. You don't need a guy for that, you know? And it took a long time for me to just sort of allow myself to receive being taken care of in any sort of capacity. But, yeah, it has defined all of my relationships. They're the ones who are all messed up and have all these issues, and I'm the supportive girlfriend who's going to love them through it. And usually when I have a crisis, they're nowhere to be found. Like I said, this last guy wasn't that bad. I mean, he actually saw me through, you know, a couple of rough patches. He actually gave me really great career advice. He actually pushed me towards, you know, looking into becoming a life coach myself, you know. And, you know, so he did, I thought, at some point, I thought he cared. But then ultimately, you know, once he moved away, it like he just changed into this completely different person and could not care less.
So now, all right. So now make the link for me between not taking care of yourself first, not putting yourself first in the relationship end of things, that aspect of life, and the same thing now in the professional end of life. What do you think the connection there is that I'm beginning to see?
Well, that's what I do. I don't put myself first ever.
Yeah, because what I'm hearing is your career choice wasn't what you really wanted.
Right.
The most of, anyway. I mean, you know, if you absolutely positively, you know, were adamantly opposed to it, I'm sure you wouldn't have gone that direction. So, you know, there was some interest there, certainly. But it sounds like you didn't choose your first passion.
Yeah. It's very true.
Yeah. So that's what sounds like is at the core here for you, Penelope, is putting you first. Mm-hmm. Your desires, your needs. What would happen if you did that?
I don't know.
What do you begin to feel when I ask that? What emotion came up when I even asked that question?
I sort of felt paralyzed.
Mm-hmm.
Like I would not know how to act at all. And the thought of, you know, people have said to me, especially because I've been working as a physician for so long, like, you know, you must have some money saved up, which I do. Why don't you just take a year off and just, you know, pursue acting like 150%, you know, don't work at all in the ER for a year or however much money you have saved, you know, 6 months, whatever it is, and just go for broke, you know, just do
mm-hmm.
it. And it terrifies me.
What terrifies you about that?
Being broke, ultimately, yeah, you know, being unable to pay my bills and pay my rent and, you know, mm-hmm. the things and being sort of destitute, you know, like abject. And then, yeah, I think being broke terrifies me. I don't want to be there.
Hmm. Yeah, well, you know, that makes sense. That makes sense. Anybody looking to do a career change, you know, and I've certainly worked with enough clients that are looking to do that, you know, has that fear. And, you know, of course, all the coaching students that I'm working with, you know, many of them are looking to make that career change. It's like, oh my God, how do I get out of my full-time job and then, you know, start this business of my own? And then, of course, that's not exclusive to a coaching practice. That's to an acting career or anything else where you kind of have to generate it on your own. So it's a very common fear and a common concern. And it makes, you know, it makes a lot of sense. How much actual real serious thought have you given to creating an action plan to be able to do that? That if you were to go ahead and take some time off down the road, I mean, maybe it's not this year, right? But that, like, how much money would you need? What could you do to make it work realistically? How much thought have you given to that?
Prior to this year, none, like zero. There mm-hmm. was 0% chance that I was going to do that. This past year, I you know, maybe because of the breakup and sort of, you know, just everything being shooken up, I was like, you know, I do need to just focus on myself for a minute. And what do I really want to do? And there is a project that I've been wanting to finish writing and film. So the last couple months I've been talking to my friends in LA because I've certainly more like contacts out in LA about maybe taking 2 months off, and just kind of, you know, crashing on people's couches for 2 months and just banging out this project. That's about as far as I can, like, go without feeling like I'll come back and have, like, negative bank accounts and, you know,
right.
closed on my house and stuff like that. I still don't know how I would work that with my job. I certainly am not going to have 2 months of time off to take, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't – it would probably mean, you know, taking a leave of absence or something. Which I know my company's not going to love. But it is in the back of my head that I think that's something I should do this year. As far as money goes, like, you know, again, it's so funny. Like, I'll bankroll my own project. I don't, you know, a lot of my friends have done Kickstarters and things like that to fund their projects. I'm like, fuck it, I'll just do it myself. Like, I have enough money. It's not going to be that much money. I'll bankroll that. But I don't have any fear of that. But, you know, I have fear of, you know, not having enough for life. But for art, no problem, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, not having enough for life, what, for the 2 months?
No, well, when I finish at the end of the 2 months. Like, what if I deplete everything in 2 months? I don't think I would, but... You know,
well, yeah, because I heard you say before that a year really scares you from that perspective, but the 2 months sounded feasible.
Right. 2 months, I think, is feasible, unless my company, you know, fires me, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
you can't take that much time off and goodbye. But I feel like if I could figure that part out, I think 2 months is doable. And I've had enough feedback from my friends where they would help me with the project. And, you know, like I said, I'll just crash on people's couches for a little bit. And everybody seems okay with that for now.
Mm-hmm. So what would be the... What would be the first step that you'd have to take to begin to explore the possibility of taking 2 months off from your employer's perspective?
I guess, I mean, well, the first thing I would want to do is actually figure out how much time off. You know, we accrue hours every paycheck or whatever. So I would want to have that figured out so at least I know how many days I can take without bothering anybody. And then, so that would be the first step. And then the second step would really be talking to my medical director about it and, you know, seeing what could be worked out. I don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
Could be, but yeah,
so because it sounds like that as you think about the fears that you have about what some of the obstacles would be, it sounds like there's some specific questions you can ask of specific people to get a little bit clearer on some of those things. And at least, you know, you might not get all the answers that you need. Sometimes, you know, these decisions are a gamble no matter how you slice it. But it sounds like there are some variables that can be easily answered by asking your employer, asking your medical director and stuff. Am I right about that?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And then that way you begin to get a clearer picture of how feasible it is. You know, and
the first step.
Yeah, great.
Yeah. Okay.
So when are you going to have that conversation with them?
I go to work tomorrow. So yeah, maybe tomorrow during the day before I go to work, I'll count all my hours. And then if I see her, I'll have to check on her schedule when she's working. But yeah, this week, whatever shift I work with her.
Ooh, great.
Not gonna be happy.
Well, you think through a little bit too exactly how you want to have the conversation, right? Using even some of your best, you know, open-ended questions and coaching skills, you know, and certainly acknowledging and validating how she feels, you know, letting her know that you get that, right? So, you know, give some thought about how to have the conversation in the most powerful way and really coming from a place of power, not from a place of lack and need. So very good.
Thank you.
So what's the biggest insight you got from this conversation, Penelope?
That maybe things aren't so impossible. And, you know, I can actually pursue my dreams without problems, you know, without fear, without obstacles. It's really quite doable, actually, if you break it down into baby steps.
Great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of a big lesson for life, too, breaking it down into smaller steps. It's always much more possible that way, right?
Yeah. Like counting the number of hours I have, that's, I can do that.
Yeah, right? And that's the first step in exploring the possibility of the time off. It's also a first step in a larger issue, which is the one that ties all of this together, the relationship as well as the career, and that is taking care of you and doing something that's important for you first.
Right.
You know, and that's what I'm hearing is an area for you that there's so much opportunity to grow in, is making decisions that serve you, sometimes at least.
Right, sometimes.
And that serve you first.
It's a novel concept. So, I have to sit on that one for a while.
Yeah. Novel concept for so many people. As a matter of fact, Cheryl Richardson wrote a really great book. I'd recommend it actually, called Take Time for Your Life. And one of the things she talks about is practicing what she calls extreme self-care. And if we weren't out of time, I would explain what that is, but I recommend the book.
Okay.
And but it's really, really great book. So it's Take Time for Your Life by Cheryl Richardson. So,
okay. I will check it out.
So great. So keep me posted, Penelope, on how that all goes. I would love to know how it goes when you have that conversation with your medical director and all that other stuff, and just, you know, keep me posted and updated.
Okay, I will. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Have a great night, and thanks for calling in to Mark My Words.
Okay, good night.
And thanks for listening. Good night. Okay. Wow. So taking time for ourselves first, novel concept for so many of us. So many of us who are helpers, particularly those in the helping professions, are just, you know, when it comes time to getting the help that we need, nope, doesn't, we're also not as good as, not as good at asking for that as we are at giving it. You know, even our first caller, Safiya, mentioned that with her dad. You know, he's always there for everybody else. And, you know, when it comes time to doing things for himself, that's a challenge for him as well. So common theme, and certainly the theme for tonight here on Mark My Words. So before we close for the night, I just want to announce some upcoming shows here on the Life Coach Radio Network, hosted by my awesome colleagues here on the Life Coach Radio Network's team of talented and dedicated coaches, all dedicated to making your life just a little bit more of what you want it to be. So first of all, my next show is 2 weeks from tonight on April 19th. So you can go to blogtalkradio.com/Life Coach Radio Network and scroll through the upcoming episodes till you find the next episode of Mark My Words and click the blue reminder button so that you won't miss it. And let's see. So Wednesday afternoon at 1 p.m. on the Life Coach Radio Network is Learn the Secrets of a Compelling Website, SEO, and Online Branding. And that is, let's see. From this talk, you'll learn several aspects of website design, branding, and marketing, as well as many common pitfalls that business owners fall into when developing a website. So the topics covered will include WordPress, search engine optimization, web hosting, call to actions, as well as branding and marketing. So that, again, is on Wednesday at 1 p.m. And then in addition to that, on Thursday at 8 p.m., we have E2S Relationship Series, Creating the Most Important Relationship. And that's with Carolyn Owens. And as she says, when we're aligned in relationship with ourselves, we can then enjoy and value other relationships for what they truly offer. Instead of coming from need and lack, we can realize that our relationships are gifts and opportunities to grow and relate with others in an empowering way. So again, that is going to be on Thursday night at 8 o'clock p.m. So that about wraps it up. And there we go. That wraps it up for tonight. As I invite you to mark your words, if you'd like. If you have feedback about the show, please go to markmywordsradio.com and scroll down to the feedback link. If you'd like to follow the Life Coach Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio, then just visit us at www.blogtalkradio.com/Life Coach Radio Network, and you'll be able to click the follow button and leave us a message. Also visit our website at www.lifecoachradionetworks.com. I hope you enjoyed the past hour and that you found it engaging, enlightening, and stimulating. You can listen to Mark My Words live on the first and third Sundays of every month, and as well as listen to any previous show from my archives at markmywordsradio.com and on iTunes by searching Mark My Words. I look forward to speaking with you all again next time at 9 p.m. Eastern. Thank you for listening to Mark My Words. I'm Mark, and those are my words. Good night.